I don't know if you're going to see this voicemail, but I thought I was happy.
Are you happy?
I'm not happy at all.
Question is, are you happy?
I'm the happiest I've ever been right now.
P.S. Be the person who you'd want to meet, because somebody needs you.
Welcome to Are You Happy? The Happy Hour. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Are You Happy Podcast. For the longest time, we've been on vacay, but we are back and fresh. And hello, faces. We've not done a vodcast in a while, and that's simply because we just didn't feel the need to. But today is a special occasion for two reasons. A, because we came out of vacay for this wonderful team right here that you can see. And then two, you know, we have a lot of good stuff coming, so get excited because it's about to get on. It's what it's about to do. I am Vanessa Vivacious, your host and executive producer, and before us, we have these fine gentlemen from, I'll let them introduce themselves.
I'm Scott Homan, the director of the documentary Witness Underground.
Hello, I'm Anthony Mathenia. I'm a friend of Scott's. I'm co-producer on this documentary.
Awesome. Well, it's lovely to meet you guys. And if you hear dogs in the background, is what it is. It's real life, right? They're making cameos. So I'm so excited that you guys are here. And first off, I would really love to kind of hear the backstory on how you found us and what led you to reach out to us.
Your show is, I use Pod. I think that's how I found you. And I use that to get to become a guest on their shows. And we've been matched by an algorithm, to put it as bluntly as possible. Alex Sanfilippo, who built that app, is a really cool guy. He does a lot of great work in the podcasting space. And I've loved working with it. And I think you're doing a great job. So thanks for having us on.
Hey, well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I too was new to podcasts in the last year, or pod as it were, and I've interviewed some really insanely amazing people with like really cool stories, from like CEOs to, you know, I was homeless before, but then I built this whole, you know, empire, or even like a small group of women who found common interests within their local community. And now they're running like this nonprofit for women and they travel the country. So it seems like so many partnerships have been built because of pod. So shout out to Alex and his team. This was not planned.
So there's another example of an app or technology bringing people together. And our film was kind of about that, actually. It's kind of the inception of the relationships that we develop and explore in the film. Is from web one, basically the early internet, like someone built a web page, who is the main story in our film. And because of that, Anthony and I both found this other community that was similar to our lives and similar to our communities. You know, like we came together using technology. So it's like, that's a new world we're in. It's like, even cities or states away, you can connect with people that you never would have otherwise met because of some app or tech. That's the positive side of the modern world, I guess.
Yeah, you're totally right. And it's really nice when you can see. Sure, go for it.
You want to jump in?
I'm sorry, was there more to that, or did I?
I think that was just a quip joke. He's like, yeah, wait until you jump in and tell me about the dystopia.
Yeah. Hang on. Is there like a side effect for
our documentary? I'm sorry.
No, you're totally good. You're totally good. I am so excited to talk to you about it because I have so many questions. You did a fantastic job on the trailer. Just saying, you guys did an amazing job. I was hooked from the very beginning. I grew up in not exactly the same background, but I worked at a Christian rock venue. And so So it spoke to me on many levels, and it gave me flashbacks of growing up. And I tell people that I started working behind a bar at 13, and they're like, what? And I'm like, chill. It was a Christian rock bar. We're serving Fritos and hot dogs. But I was host to some really great bands, like, some of them that made it to the mainstream. I forget names. Bowling for Soup.
Yeah, I know those guys.
There's someone else, like some ska band that's really famous, and I can't. Five Iron Frenzy, that's one of them.
Oh, yeah, I have known them. Great, that's cool. Yeah. We're in the same, like, music space, and, like, Anthony, you probably heard of those bands, too, huh?
Bowling for Soup
was, like, pretty major on the radio.
Yeah, I had friends that would travel around in these weird Christian, like, underground music scenes in their evangelical churches. And yeah, it was something like that.
Or Tooth and Nail Records just comes to mind. I had some Pentecostal friend of mine who was always like handing me a cassette tape or a CD of a new thing on Tooth and Nail. That's like, check this out. And I, you know, we're from this other religious background, but he's like, you know, there's cool Christian music too, man. And there was some cool stuff on Tooth and Nail too.
I wish I could remember the names, but it was like a punk scene where they do like little house shows and stuff, but everybody was like evangelical. It was like, wow. It was kind of like our documentary, just like a different little slant on that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the stories that you tell, or from what I gather, the stories that are within it of the people within your church, the people that you've met and all those relationships that forged how you guys got out of your, you know, your current standing at the time when you were within that religion. Before we go to that though, I do want to ask you, you know, just generally speaking, and this is, you know, for our show purposes, are you happy?
Well, I would say I'm happier now than when I was in it. Like when you're in that culture, there's a lot of restrictions and you can't really speak out and you're getting shut down all the time for trying to do anything new or anything that's like good for you or following your curiosities. So yeah, definitely I used to say like leaving that religion was maybe the best decision I've ever made in my entire life. And I hope it's not the only great decision I make in my life. But from that point on, it was like, this is where my life starts. And now I get to do all the things I've ever dreamed of. And my life is my own. And like making this movie is like me having my voice. I'm absolutely loving like owning a piece of art and being the director of it, like writing, directing, creating, like all of it. And then it's like, I wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, I have to write emails to people. And it's like, it might sound like an office job to somebody, but I'm like, I'm having the time of my life. I'm like, the conversations and connections I'm having are, it's amazing. The Kickstarter is a lot of work. And it's a lot all at once, but it's still really, really fun. And we will be successful with your help, but it's
and with viewers like you, yeah. Yeah, we will definitely spread it out because it is a wonderful project. It's a beautiful piece of art. I can't even tell you how gorgeous it is. And I haven't even seen all of it. So I'm, you know, just from that small tidbit and from the Kickstarter, all of the info that you put there is so relevant. And I appreciate it from a filmmaker standpoint as well. So that's why I'm able to say that. But I just think it's amazing what you guys did there. And I can't wait for everyone to see it and to see it, you know, available on more commercial platforms as well. And I wish you guys like so much amazing journeys ahead. For sure.
Thank you. Yeah, it's everything we've ever wanted to put with this movie and to tell about this story, all the art we could possibly think of, 32 albums, 9 books. A number of those books are Anthony's and his CD that he put out back in that day because he was in that music scene. My first album that I did solo back in the day. And it's like 32 full albums, like 12 in the faith and like however many more, 22 that came after, or 2020. So yeah, it's like a huge amount of art and all that is donated art to the success of the movie, but you're actually like pre-sale selling the movie and all that music is like a part of the project. So it's like, it's everything we've ever dreamed to put together plus extras, plus the director's commentary, plus the soundtrack is amazing. Like it's like, we've been working on this campaign for years and now it's finally like available and the film is available for the first time.
Can you tell me how long exactly that you worked on this?
So I had like an interview series on YouTube that was sort of the prototype to this called XGW Coming Out. So like coming out stories, to use the language of the LGBT community, of leaving religion and like that kind of similar experience. And that led to crowdfunding this in 2018. So I was like 2 years of kind of dabbling in that and doing interviews and putting that together and making these high quality little interview with following a single person. And then we did like this group of interviews for that became this movie. And it wasn't even our idea to make a movie, but then it was like, oh, like that was an amazing set of interviews and amazing music. And they're all like people that I knew from back in the day. So we kind of like decided like, let's actually take this to the next level, not just do a YouTube channel thing. Let's go to and make a full film festival worthy film that will be on Netflix or other streaming services. So that was 2018. We crowdfunded it, concepted it, and we shot in a few months, like in May. And then it took about 3 full years to go from concept, crowdfund, and have a finished film in the film festival circuit. And so that, and it's been a couple more years working on the distribution. So now we're in the distribution phase and we're just about ready to hit the button, all the legal, all the paperwork, all the all the creative, it's all completely done. The Library of Congress has a copy. Like we're 100% ready to push the button, and this is raising, we're raising funds to get it out on, and do the distribution of it.
That's so awesome. Anthony, if you could give like a brief synopsis of what the essence of this film is for you, what would you say that is?
This film's a very personal story for me, even though I don't really appear in it. I was just kind of auxiliary to this music scene, this tremendous creative scene that happened in Minneapolis. I was a bit player, but it really impacted my life. I was that weird, creative, quirky kid that didn't always fit in and didn't always feel accepted because of my desires to write a book or record an album. It was this nuclear gopher scene that was happening back at that time that really, for the first time in my life, made me feel accepted and loved and championed for just being an artist. And I carry those things with me today. And that's really the essence of what the documentary is. It's like creative expression can get you through some tough times. And with creative expression and positivity and joy, you can build an even better life free of whatever kind of constraints life's throwing on you.
Yeah, I totally agree. Anthony, can you tell me like a sample or an example, excuse me, of one of those hard times that the creativity really pulled you through?
Well, I think that everybody has experienced being like in a spot and, you know, maybe you were just a teenager and it was your first bad breakup and it felt like it was the end of the freaking world, right? You know what it's like to have like that one song that you listen to until the cassette wears, you know, starts, maybe not, the CD scratches. But like, you know how songs and music, these things can carry us through. There's a great line in the documentary by Eric, who's one of the stars, the studies. He says, for creative people, it's a need. You have to create or you'll go crazy. So, you know, for a creative person, they just want to do things. They just want to get it out there. That's the only way they will ever be happy in life. The documentary focuses on a group where creativity is not always valued. It might be looked at a little strange. And, you know, for someone having to come up in that, to have just a tremendous group of friends to play music with, to put on, you know, rock shows with, and, you know, just really feel nice. That was just such an awesome time in my life. There's one song that I carry with me from a band that came out of that scene, Pop Riveter. And it's just a simple line that changed my world back then. It was like, if you don't know love, or if you don't show love, then you don't know love. And it's just, I look back and it's like, okay, that's just such a simple thing. You know, it's not like the tremendous artistic line ever. But at the time in my life, I needed to hear that. And it changed me.
And what were the effects of that change?
The effects of that change was I got kicked out of a religion, but it was all right. I mean, I won't go into all the gritty war stories, but yeah, I came back to the church and I decided I was going to make a change for the better. And that change wasn't well received, I guess. I'll just put it that way. But that's awesome. I look back at my life and I talked to my ex-wife about this the other day. It's like there was no scenario where we would ever, ever remain in that restrictive environment. We're just not those kind of people. And so, you know, life took its course and whatever, we had to lose family and friends. But to be able to be free and make choices about how you want to live your life and pursue your dreams, that is such an amazing gift. And I have no regrets.
I'm glad that you made that decision, and it sounds like you've taken advantage of everything afterward. So I can't imagine what that's like to lose a lot of people in your life that were once a major part of your life and then have to start over completely new as if, you know, you just move to a whole other place with no one. Like that's got to be so difficult for both of you.
It's something that I recommend to people actually, is if you do go through something tricky where you're ostracized for whatever reason, it doesn't have to be a religious reason. It could be even like our structure or societal structures of work, you get fired. I mean, that's a big part of your life. You spend you know, 40 hours a week of your waking best, most alert time of your life every week with your work community, and being fired for any reason cuts you off from that. So like anyone can go through that. And if you don't want to be reminded of that, or if you want to like do something different, it's sometimes hard when you are surrounded by that environment or some of those same people, but now they're treating you differently. And one of my recommendations is like, well, I went to the other side of the planet and I lived in Asia for 5 years. That was my extreme, like get out of society, go try a new place to reinvent myself or become the person I want to become, or experience like, yeah, growth in a different way, or accelerated growth or something. But you can even do that. You can do that just by changing where you spend time and who you spend time with in your own community, or like go to the next town over, or, you know, something as simple as like changing your apartment. It sounds dramatic at the time or impossible, but like that, it's totally doable. And all the same things exist on every part of the planet. There's a grocery store and there's an apartment and there's a job. And if you just want to do anything, changing your environment can actually accelerate your growth. And it's interesting that you kind of started with like, it can be hard to change your environment, but that's actually like, if you do that, it can actually, if you like, it's like being a refugee or choosing to go be an expat in another country. Like one of them's a choice and one's sort of like you're thrust into it. And like you can choose with the right mindset to have a different environment. And that can be this huge benefit to accelerate your growth as a person.
So do you think then that depending on the choice, if it's your choice versus a result, then the transitions may be a little bit different? Whereas if it was your choice, it's a little different than if it was something that was forced upon you.
Yeah. And I think it comes down to mindset. Like I meet people even from, okay, like Argentina is not, doesn't have a great economy. So a lot of people have left Argentina, and I don't live in the States right now. I live in a place where a lot of Argentinians are, and in Southern Mexico until recently. I'm in Panama now, but like a lot of those people left because they had to, but at the same time, most of them are really excited about it. So like, yeah, there wasn't a lot of opportunities in Argentina, but in Mexico, they can start a business and like have make good money. And like, they love their life living in this beautiful place. And it's almost like a war can send you off. I mean, I'm getting into the weeds here, but a war can send you off because out of desperation. But if you like choose to leave, that's, it can be empowering. You choose to try a new thing, and not everybody wants to do that. It's not easy. And simply get stuck in the, oh my God, I'm a victim of this terrible thing, and like just be in that mindset forever. And even if that's the case, you can change the way you see it and embrace the change and the opportunities that come with that change. And I feel like a lot of this religion or film talks about the Jehovah's Witnesses, there's really no choice. You're in it. It's just, it's happened. Like you're cut off. So it's an opportunity actually, but it might take a while to like figure out how to think of it that way.
So and before we dive into that, because I totally want to go into the Jehovah's Witness and more, you touched on something earlier where you said being able to live your life again and to start your life, having not had control of your life and then being able to begin that. Can you tell me what that transition felt like for you?
For me, like I was dating someone in the religion at the time that I was like, oh, this isn't real. This is a fantasy that I'm a part of. And I'm trapped in a weird dystopian mind control organization. I've been resistant my whole life, but like I had this like definite wake up delineation. Like this is the moment where I woke up or whatever, or got out. But for me, I had always had this sort of half in, half out life where I was like, I was skeptical of it most of my life. And some of it, I really believed at different points to different degrees of strength of belief, I guess. But for me, it was this great breath of fresh air, like, oh, finally, I don't have to wake up early on a Sunday and I don't have to go knocking on doors and talk about things I don't actually care about or believe. But that's like mandatory. I now have, you know, the vast majority of my time back to do what I want, and I don't have any restrictions on what that is. For me, that was like, what I've always wanted. Awesome. And I was very excited and embracing of it. Whereas the woman I was dating at the time was sort of shocked because she'd never really hung out with anyone outside of that circle besides her work. And even that's like very restricted. You can't spend time without when you're off the clock, you're not hanging out with workmates. It's like against the rules in that religion or against the framework. So for her, it was this like huge tragic thing. Like, how do I navigate this new world? And for me, it always kind of been half in the normal world, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense to be half in and half out. But is there a particular moment or something that happened or something someone said where that decision was made or the switch occurred. Like, I'm not a switch, you're not a werewolf, but you know what I mean? Like, is there, is, you know what I mean? Is there like a particular pinpoint where, I don't know, that the wind blew east and you're just like, you know what? I'm done. Like, what specifically was that for you?
Well, there was a moment where, I mean, my Anthony has a totally different story, but my, just to give you my brief one, and it's like the, they call it the needle that, or the, yeah, was it the straw that broke the camel's back? Like, there was a lot of problems already that I was very aware of. And I was like, well, you know, I accept that problem and that problem and that problem and that problem and that problem. And after like 14, 15 years of accepting things I don't really agree with, because it's part of the system of the tribe I'm a part of, there was one that really got me, which was like the discontinuity of what scientists and evolutionists are saying with what creationists are saying. And this group has a very, very specific thing when it comes to a very belief when it comes, you have to believe everything that they teach and you can't disagree with any of it. And they're very literal that like the flood happened and all the animals were wiped out except for what was on a boat. Even the ones that got to Australia, and they have somehow swam there apparently. And all of them, even though they don't exist anywhere else on the planet, they all swam together. Like, I was like, there's a lot of holes in this and it doesn't add up. And it was like, there's a lot to dive in on that one. But the thing that really hit me was that like that next week I was at one of the church meetings, and one of the speakers was saying something really, really saying homophobic stuff from the stage about how people that practice homosexuality basically deserve to die at the hand of Jesus. Like, he'll murder them himself or something. And I was like, oh my God, I said this like realization, like the hair sort of on my back or whatever, my neck. And I was like looking around, I was like, I'm surrounded by cult members who are like nodding their heads along with hate speech. I stood up in the middle of that and walked out and never went back. But that was like my, oh my God, how did I not quite realize what this is until now? I've been skeptical and like, that was my moment.
Anyway. And then how many years were you there?
That was 27 at that point. I kind of had like a leaving thing at 19 when I left for like a half year, but then kind of got dragged back into it by family for family reasons and took it like a more nuanced view of it. But
Anthony, same question.
I was in it for 29 years. My exit story was a little different than Scott's. I was a hardcore believer that, like a lot of people that are focused on in the film, just had a simple question that they couldn't get a good answer to and couldn't reconcile it. Starting over, yeah, it's tough. It's hard. You know, I can't lie and say, oh, it's a bed of roses, but you can land in a bed of roses if you persevere. And there's kind of a beauty in starting over and rebuilding your life and knowing you can do it. Like Scott says, like, you can go to some new place and start over. You know, I've enjoyed living in different places and experiencing different things. That's how I've grown as a person. That's how I found myself in all this, you know, crazy extended exit. And yeah, I'd say, you know, there's the freedom of it is awesome, and it allows you to do what you want to do and know that you have the power within you to completely start over and figure it all out as many times as you need to do it.
And so for you, Anthony, was it a conflict of doctrine, or was it a particular person or experience that kind of ended things for you in that regard?
I don't want to get into like the weeds that is just so niche, but I'll just say like, the religious organization on paper condemned another political organization, and I found information that they had secretly been involved with the political organization they were condemning. It was basically a hypocrisy that I asked questions, and, you know, I got answers. The answers were not true. And so, it's a simple thing. That just kind of just opens your mind. And I just kind of felt like, I think a lot of people go through this. It's like, well, if they didn't tell me the truth about this, what else didn't tell me the truth about? What else was I lied to about? And it's just sometimes these innocent little questions that just open your mind to start looking at everything. And then I think a lot of people, at least one of the stories of Cindy, in the documentary where you go through this hyper fixated, I'm going to look through all the old literature and I'm going to see where, you know, where they told a lie here and how they changed this doctrine and how Orwellian it all is, because you're trying to like go through it on your mind. It's a total and complete rug pull. I mean, like, especially for someone like myself, third generation born into this religion, you know, thinking only one way for, let's say, 27 years or however long it was. And then suddenly, I mean, like, we talk about like the physical starting over of starting over without family and friends, but the mental starting over of tabula rasa, not knowing what you believe in.
And thank you for sharing that. No need to go any further than that. But I do have a similar experience to you, Scott. I didn't grow up in the church all the time. And in fact, at one point, my mom saw something that she was really appalled by. So she took us away from it. And then I got grounded for going to church because I wanted to go. And then, wow. So yeah, that's a funny one. After that, I'd been at the same church for a good number of years and it was great. It was a very family, non-denominational Christian church. But then I had a friend named Bobby and Bobby was gay. Bobby was openly gay and he was beautiful. And then I found out, you know, by way of the vines that, you know, they didn't 100% accept Bobby, but they wouldn't tell Bobby to his face. But everyone else knew that they would never fully love Bobby. And I couldn't live with that. I couldn't live with that kind of false, you know, false feeling, false family. And then just knowing that they felt that way about all people, you know, of any letter of the LGBTQ plus, you know, that they would never see them as full people and that they would condemn them in such a way. My son is transgender and, you know, I could never even step inside a place that would think ill of him, let alone do things in the name of whatever, religious doctrine that they're serving. But, it was very similar. So I left. And even though I knew all of these really great people at the core part of their being, you know, that's a very difficult thing to swallow. So yeah, I can totally understand where you're coming from on that.
Yeah, it's this religion teaches that your love and all of your relationships are conditional at all times, and including family. And they really harp on that there's just some scripture in the Bible that's like, you should cut off your own family members if they don't follow. And they talk about that a lot and they practice that a lot. So if anyone is kicked out by the leadership of the religion or walks away for their own reasons, there's this big effort to distance yourself, and people help you to distance yourself from those family members or loved ones or former community members. There's no dignified way to walk away. And our film talks a lot about that. That's the whole purpose of the film, is the shunning that happens, is like the cutoff. Why would this religion need so deeply to make people distance themselves from their own loved ones? Why is that essential to the survival of this religion or the personal faith of an individual? And we dive into that in the middle of the film. There's like three chapters. We humanize the lived experience in a high control community like this, and then the shunning, the losses that come from that. And then how do you rebuild your life? And then we demonstrate a number of musicians and artists rebuilding their lives on the outside in a way that's empowering through self-expression and music and finding your voice.
Was there a particular musician or artist that stands out every time you think about all of them that you're just kind of taken aback by their transformation and their story afterward?
For me, and we put this in the film, there's a few artists and we highlight a number of different artists throughout the film, but Cindy Elvendahl in the movie, her and Eric, and then Chad, there's four members and three of them are ex-witnesses. They made music in the religion, and Cindy kind of fronted her own band, did a lot of the songwriting. She's a brilliant vocalist and melody writer. And basically in the movie, you see her kind of developing her voice as a young person. And then it's almost like a narrative part of the film that is really special that we have this kind of self-empowerment angle. But basically they form this band after leaving and after they go through all the losses and the tragic stuff that comes from shunning. And they create this incredible band where the lyrics are just super powerful about the exit, about reframing your idea of how the world works and your own personal belief system, and realizing that what you had before wasn't real. And like all of, like, she captured it in music and in lyrics that are really, really compelling and powerful. And I want, like, that's been the soundtrack to my life for 10 years now. And this is the cool opportunity of the film, is to like highlight this particular band, but also there's like 20 other bands that are part of the Kickstarter and the film. And the soundtrack is like a celebration of that Nuclear Gopher music scene and the post Nuclear Gopher scene. And then the Witness Underground podcast is like the extension of the Witness Underground movie, and that there's people like this all over the world. And it doesn't have to just be this one religion. There's ex-Orthodox Jewish artists who've gone and made exit albums and makes music about it, or ex-Mormon albums. And there's many, many different kinds of high control groups that, and David Bazan from, what's the band? Pedro the Lion is a Christian band, or known in the Christian community. He came out as atheist, we talked about it. He did a solo album and he did a solo tour. He's still with Pedro the Lion and they still tour and they still make music. But like that's like that kind of story is becoming more prominent, and it's almost like post-faith, post-cult music is like a transformational thing, and it can be really empowering. And so I think High TV and Cindy Alvendahl's music, and she's had two more projects since then. Her and her husband have a new one right now that they just launched. She had Puff Puff that came after High TV. It was all female, all ex-Witness band that made amazing songs that are also her voice. And it's really cool stuff.
That is highly recommend. Cool. Yeah. Are you guys going to put together like a Spotify list of everything eventually?
I'm so glad you asked that. Actually, Ryan Sutter, his music is prominent in the movie as well. He had like a 3-album exit trilogy that he did. We talk about that and show a lot of music of his in the film. He has just put together a playlist during the Kickstarter that's like, we're going to put this out during the Kickstarter because it's like a really cool, like the playlist of my journey. And it's like 30 minutes. It's like listening to an album, like a greatest hits, but like it's his actual logical and emotional journey leaving the faith. So that's, we will have that. And also Anthony's, part of the music community, and he's a big part of the Kickstarter and co-producer on the film. He put together, in the back end for the Kickstarter planning, we have a Discord, and, he put together like a music thing that's like highlighting a different band every day for the team that's behind the Kickstarter. So I think we'll put together something, but all that music right now is available in the Kickstarter as downloads the day we're successful. So November 17th, we'll be successful with your help. Thank you for helping and supporting the project. And you can get all the music that ever came out of both the inside and the outside communities of music creators, musicians, and artists.
That's so wonderful. Well, you heard them, people. Get on it. Go to the link. Kickstarter.
WitnessUnderground.com.
And they're on Instagram. That's like super simple. Open your Instagram, Witness Underground. Yeah. Do it now. Not now, afterward. Okay. So I'm curious. In the trailer, I recall seeing that one snippet where it says, you know, every year there's a movie about Jehovah's Witnesses being made. And this is going to be a simple question, but I just really want to know, what is it that separates what you made from all those other films?
So most of those films, and I'll highlight two that are really good and you should go watch them. One is called Crusaders. It's a Vice Versa, Vice, the TV channel, made or sponsored by an ex-Witness director who worked in the horror space. That movie's great. And it actually highlights a lot of the activists working in social media and a lot of different forms of activism that different people are taking and doing for different reasons. And I feel like it highlights especially Amber Scora, Barbara Anderson, and Mark O'Donnell. And those are like three big names of people who have like written books, work in the legal side, or work on human rights that have left the religion and are trying to like make effect change in the religion and in society and the knowledge of this. So like that, but they highlight like 12 more people that are also like high, very well selected group of people. And then that's on the documentary side. And then on a narrative film side, there is a Confessions of a Teenage Jesus Jerk by Tony Duchesne. He wrote a book by the same title, a novel, and it got turned into a TV show. And it's a big directorial debut of now a famous director who I'm blanking on at the moment. Sorry about that. And it's awesome. And it really hits on a lot of the same notes that our film does, but through a narrative lens instead of a documentary. And I've become friends with the author and it's awesome. Like those are great. But the vast majority, especially ones that are made by TV news channels, they are shocked to learn how shunning works and how tragic it is and how it is in your neighborhood and it's happening to your neighbors. And those people that are knocking on your doors are trying to create the situation where you or someone you know will suffer, or you probably know someone who has suffered from this because it's like such a universal religion. And they get shocked by that knowledge because it's new and they just thought it was a benign, safe Christian religion with like well-meaning people. Some of them are well-meaning. Most of them are good people. But there's this really, really big dark side to it, where they're an actual like dangerous fundamentalist, high control, brainwashing cult. And don't use that term lightly. It's what it is. The news types of documentaries focus on the pain and the trauma and the anger that the people feel towards this situation that they're now in, and victimize the people that are out. And although we do suffer and we could be, you consider ourselves victims of the shunning, it's true. The people that are trapped inside who are doing the shunning, they have to do it. They're coerced to do it. They're in the mind control. They're wrapped up in the cage of it all, the trap, and they can't see it. It's like, there's an analogy of like a fish swimming in water, asking another fish like about the water. And the other fish is like, what is the water? Like, what are you talking about? Like they don't know that they're stuck in this thing. They don't understand that they're manipulated. They think it's their own choice. The mind control programming has worked, and like, they're the ones who are the real victims. Anyway, most of those other documentaries, and I want them to exist. They're talking about important things, but they end with the pain and the anger and trauma and someone crying. And that's like, you're just supposed to feel pity. Like, I don't know, maybe feel, take action or something. It's a little bit manipulative. And a little bit like, it's like it's benefiting to getting viewers for them, exploiting the emotions of someone who's truly suffering. And it's not really the effective method to get change, in my opinion. So what our documentary does differently is it highlights something beautiful that these people in the film are very successful at. And they probably didn't even know they were doing it. Music was a coping mechanism for all of us on some level, but it helped us find our voice, and it was empowering. And it helps people to process their trauma through music and self-expression of any kind. It could be writing, it could be painting, it could be anything that you do. That's the message that we're sending, is like, there's an it gets better thing. Like, what happens after this terrible situation happens to someone in their life? Let's not just dwell on like the moment it all sucked and it got terrible for that person. There's more that happens. Like, this can be the beginning of an incredibly empowering life. Like, what did this person go and accomplish after they successfully navigated a cult mind control situation? Like, don't pity them. Celebrate that they actually were one of the few that were able to navigate and get out and get away from it and move on from it. And that's what we highlight more, but I haven't seen before in another film on the topic.
And so when people finish watching the film, whether it's, via the way that it's available now or afterward, when it's everywhere on all of the platforms and streaming services, because your Kickstarter will succeed, what do you want them to walk away with?
I want them to walk away with that you probably need to go find community, like go find a different tribe. That's important. And like that was brought up by another person who just watched the film. They're like, yeah, like it seems like it was a lot easier for these people to get through it because they had other people in their lives. They had that open communication. They had support of at least one person, and they keep on supporting each other, even though they have their own lives now and they have their own separate music projects and do their own separate art. They still communicate and they keep in touch, and it's like a little support network. Mostly they just have fun. They don't need to dwell on the past, and the it's now ancient past for a lot of these people, like 15 plus years. But finding community is important, and going and building the life that you've always dreamed of. And I think Anthony mentioned that earlier in this interview, that like having, taking now without the restrictions, going and doing the thing that you always wanted. This isn't getting out when you're 40 or 50 isn't like tragic because you missed out. You can now go do all those things with passion and focus because like you're free and untethered from restrictions.
Mm. Anthony, same for you. Do you want people to walk away with?
I would like to see, have them walk away with a new favorite song, a new favorite band, a new favorite album, because the music in this documentary is really just that good. These were people you would have heard about way back when, if they had a different life circumstance, because a really talented group of people, really talented group of artists, and it's like a whole underground indie pop rock scene that no one's ever heard until Scott had the idea to make a documentary. So we're happy to have people hearing these songs.
Yeah, for sure. It looks awesome. I can't wait to hear everything. And just like the little snippets that you show, the B-roll of even, what was it, like they created their own shows as well, right?
Yeah, they had some like B-TV shows they did with a home camcorder, and then they'd make a VHS of it and like spread it around. And it was, you know, it was before YouTube came out.
Yeah, it's almost like Kids in the Hall, you remember?
Yeah, exactly. They do little skits like in Kids in the Hall or like Homie Don't Say That. What was that one? SNL.
In Living Color.
I can't remember Living Color. Yeah, thank you. Awesome.
no worries.
And they did music videos. They made like trailers for horror films that didn't exist. And they would make like music video. They make a song about something really dark, like cannibalism, and then make like jokes about cannibalism throughout the video. Like that's highlighted in the movie with the song, She Cooked Me Up and Ate Me for Dinner. It's like a guy's head on a plate and they're like seasoning his head before they eat him. And his eyes are like looking around like and there's sauce rolling down his face. they were doing all kinds of goofy, fun stuff. And a lot of it was like influenced by pop culture at the time. And then they were kind of influencing underground pop culture within that weird little sub community in a way that was really celebrated and fun. And they're like, oh, that was really funny what you guys did in the mall the other day. Like, let's make another one this weekend. I got an idea for a crazy film. And they would, there's all these possibilities because they kind of couldn't do stuff that normal people were doing. They had their own community. So like that restriction, it was in a way like this beautiful benefit. Like, well, what do we do with all this time that we have with each other? Let's rent a cabin in the woods and like make a music video. And they would just go for the weekend and like have an awesome time making new music and making a music video. So it's like a big celebration of kind of using creativity in spite of all the other kind of strange circumstances.
Do you have anything to add on that, Anthony?
No, I guess that was just some stuff we did to keep ourselves entertained. But like Ryan from the documentary talked about in another interview we did, he's like, none of us were doing this with dreams like we were going to be on MTV or, you know, be rich and famous. It was not about that for us. We were somehow going to be rock stars. We did it because we enjoyed it. We did it because it was fun. We did it because it kept us sane. We did it because it was something other than sitting in a church. I don't know why we did it, but I think you can see, even though the circumstances are really restrictive, I think in the personal expression of art, even within the boundaries, it was quite liberating and freeing to, you know, make a silly video, to put on a puppet show, you know, make an album. And I think that kind of youthful joy and enthusiasm certainly comes through in the documentary.
So two things that I gather from both of you today is that it feels as though the suppression of creativity for all of those people and everyone, you know, in your community who has left the witness life, it feels as though the suppression, you know, of that and then having left and being able to be totally free, it's almost as if like they're having like this creative rebirth because they can now do everything. But then while it's suppressed, creativity finds a way out, right? It seeps from your pores or it finds a direction when it's suppressed. So I think that's so interesting and it's so fun to watch and see them, you know, interact with one another because, you know, it'll find its way, you know, they're creative. They'll find one way or another to make it happen. So that's so fascinating to watch. And then the second thing, which I took a note because I knew I would forget, is there's a lot of catharsis I'm hearing in this creativity because all of those terrible experiences or pain or anything that they've experienced that was, you know, not positive, they could then, you know, put that into music, like you said, with that one particular artist with her lyrics. But anything that they've produced, I imagine, has a significant connection to those experiences. So much there that is prevalent. And I'm sure you guys, you know that. I mean, you're the creators of it. But thank you so much for sharing that with the world and for telling your perspective and that story in your own way. I think that it's much needed for everyone, whether they're religious or non-religious, you know, to each his own, right? But what you've created is so much of an art than just a film. So I thank you so much for creating that. And if there's anything extra that you want to share with folks about the film, you know, feel free to do that.
Well, I guess I would wrap on my side. Anthony, you can do your own, but like witnessunderground.com will have everything right now. It's the Kickstarter. It redirects to Kickstarter, which has like everything we ever dreamed of, like I mentioned. And it is a website as well. So we will go back to your other website, which is news about the film, all the related XW coming out videos. The Witness Underground podcast is like the living, breathing voice of the project, with bringing in artists and musicians of all walks to talk about their process of like transforming. And we all are doing our different growth experiences in life. And hopefully for most people, it's a gradual transition that happens throughout your life. But for a lot of us, it had a very strong delineation and maybe a very rapid change. And the art that comes out of that's fascinating to me. And it's not just like you said, like you related to the concept as someone who grew up around Christians and a music scene that was there. And it's not the only group like that. And I think that there's a lot of, it's not just a story about ex-witnesses or Jehovah's Witnesses. It's a story about human transformation. So thank you for highlighting it.
Thank you for making it. Anthony. And I had something to add at the end, but I'll wait my turn. Anthony, go for it.
I want to thank you for having us on the show to highlight this documentary. I agree with what Scott says. Yes, this the topic's about this one little niche thing that no one's really even thought about, but it's a bigger story. It's something that I think a lot of people have experienced in life. Feeling like the outsider, maybe they didn't fit in or be in a situation where they thought they couldn't fully express themselves. A Witness Underground, it's for anybody that's ever had to find themselves restarting in life for whatever reason, to know that, you know, if you put your mind to following your dreams, you will achieve them. And that's something that, you know, Scott and I have been so happy to experience. And we just appreciate anybody who's jumped on to help get us this far in this campaign, and anybody who else will hear this and jump on, because we really want to get this documentary on a major streaming service, because we think it's the kind of story that can help a lot of people, not just former Jehovah's Witnesses.
Definitely. Absolutely. And I can't wait to see it out there and be like, I know those guys. Honestly, like when you emailed us, Scott, I thought you were spam, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to see where this goes.
So, I'm You're down. Not the first person to say that. Or a lot. Yeah. Sorry, there's one of the person said something like that.
Picture. I don't know. So Are You Happy? Yeah. If you're not aware, began its root is a documentary, and it's actually being finished right now. It's currently in post-production. So we res on those things as well.
Oh, wow. That's really exciting.
Yeah, a small team traveled the world interviewing strangers about happiness. And the premise was to find the happiest person in the world. And then utilizing cinema verite, right, life, filming life as is, we were able to capture so many stories. And then another premise is that everyone has a story worth telling. So to this day, we still interview for the docuseries strangers all over the world, and we have creators all over the world. But the documentary itself traveled to India, to the UK, all over the US, capturing some of the most beautiful stories, and then some really awesome adventures where one of the characters met a guy in Utah in the dunes. And the guy was like, hey, why don't you come ride this buggy with me? Hey, you want to go get pizza? Hey, you want to come to my house? And they spent the whole day together, these two strangers sharing like some of the most intimate conversations you've ever seen on film. So it's an amazing journey. So yeah, I hope you guys will also check that out once it's out. I think you would really love it for sure.
Yeah. If you also, we're working this whole indie release angle. So if you're on that path, reach out and we can talk strategy on that. Cause I've learned a lot from other indie filmmakers. It's a fascinating topic that you've got going. Yeah. I had another one just to put this out in the world, that I wanted to do before I ever even thought of making this film. It was like, go to indigenous tribes all over the planet and ask them, and maybe it's not so much about happiness, but about like, what wisdom do you think is important to send to the next generation? Yeah. And you know, the older I get, the older those older wise people are, and the less of them we have. But I mean, they're passing these ideas down culturally, and I think that kind of thing's so fascinating. But like, happiness is a nice positive topic and such an interesting challenge.
Oh, sure.
Trying to find people who are living in the present.
it's our opportunity to put a positive, you know, energy back into the world where there's not much of all the time. You know, a lot of the content that you see online, you know, there's a lot of negative content, a lot of things that the algorithm shows you, whether you want it or not. Right. And so for us to put something engaging, something, you know, that can warm your soul or can make you feel. And if it's a sad interview, then you may resonate with them and say, hey, you know what? I'm not alone and I'm going to be okay. And that's a big deal. So, yeah, we have to talk like offline for sure. I have some documentaries that I'm also working on. One of them is about a ballerina with MS. And so hoping to get that one done within the next month, that would be great. But
I saw a woman who dances who has MS and she does these really interesting videos. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's like an 18-year-old kid. A physical challenge. So, yeah. More on that another time.
Okay. Exciting.
last bit, you guys, before you go, because Are You Happy wouldn't be what it is without this awesome question. If you could share a message with the world, and this is to both of you, if you could share a message with the world, what would that be?
Maybe I would say something like, follow your curiosities to find your own voice in the world, whatever that takes. It's the most rewarding thing I've done.
I would say make something that's pure, make something that's honest, make something that's 100% you, if not 110% you, whatever that thing is. Just create it.
Thank you. Those are two amazing answers. I've yet to hear an answer that wasn't amazing, but I appreciate you taking the time to think about it. You know, some people like have it at the ready, some don't, but I find it interesting when people kind of take a pause. It's almost as if they're reliving their life in a series of moments and then out comes this amazing knowledge drop. But yeah, thank you guys so very much. So Scott Homan, Anthony Mathenia, Witness Underground Film, awesome people. Thank you guys so much for being here. And we'll make sure to share all of your information on our pages and share the interview. And we're a fan for life. So
thank you, Vanessa, the Vivacious. Appreciate you in the Are You Happy podcast.
The Are You Happy podcast is brought to you by Are You Happy. Check out our 4 million plus follower strong community on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Linktree in profile or visit www.happypeople.me. Want to join our team of interviewers? Support the show or become a sponsor? All this and more can be done on our site, happypeople.me. If you feel that pull to answer the question, are you happy, and then share it with the world, now is your chance. Send us a voice message on Instagram to areyouhappy_podcast and let us know if you're happy or not happy. Remember, everyone has a story worth sharing. This is Vanessa Vivacious, host and executive producer for Are You Happy podcast, wishing you the best day of your lives. Be well, be kind, and be happy. See you guys next time on another wonderful episode of Are You Happy? The Happy Hour.